In this podcast, we're going to go on an adventure. First, we're going to fly into a thundercloud, go high up into the sky, up to the ozone layer, and down, crashing down again. Then, having sucked the physics or the science out of that, we're going to go into a science fair and actually go inside a Van de Graaff generator and look at how the electricity goes through that one. And then, having understood that, we're going to lie a Van de Graaff generator on its side and let it power the internet at a site in Australia's Antarctic wasteland where the wind really never stops. It's the most windy place on Earth, I think, and there's a constant gale there, and we're going to harness the gale with a Van de Graaff generator and power the internet or data centres in the frozen wastes of Antarctica. Now, that's a flight of fantasy, but the other flight I'm going to take you on is actually in reality, are real things into the clouds, and you will see lightning bolts crash down. So welcome to Peter Hill Explains, where I try and explain things scientific and lay them bare and try and get into the actual science and make them a bit more understandable. So first off, let us take us our journey into the clouds. So we're being a hot day, the heat of the sun is evaporating water. And one of the incredible things about water vapor is that water vapor is lighter than air. Air consists of two nitrogens and two oxygens, and the water is an oxygen and two hydrogens. And so that actual molecule is actually lighter than air. It's sort of half oxygen, half hydrogen gas. If you can imagine the Hindenburg, it's little Hindenburgs grabbing oxygen atoms and lifting them up into the air. And this is all very well. Normally they rise up as transparent water vapor. You can't see it until it reaches an altitude where it condenses into little droplets, tiny little droplets, which can scatter light, and they are the clouds. That is basically why the clouds are high up into the sky, because they are clouds sitting on a cushion of invisible water vapor, which has lifted them up. But in a hot day, the uplift can keep on pushing up and punch into the cold stratosphere. And when it does so, that water vapor condenses. And you may well remember the school experiment where you put water vapor in a can, boil it, and close the lid or invert it such that the can's lid is into some water. And then you see this vacuum effect where it compresses and the atmospheric pressure crushes inward. And so if you can imagine a whole kilometre wide can experiment crushing in and pulling and vacuuming up more moist air, and this forms a column, very high clouds which form an anvil in a thundercloud. Now, as the water vapor turns into or condenses into liquid droplets, these liquid droplets get pulled up and sucked up higher and higher and higher, and the temperature goes down and down and down until this water is cooled way beneath its freezing point. This is supercooled water. So in a thundercloud, you have this updraft of supercooled water, and you may have a tiny crystal, a piece of dirt, albeit a frog or a little cricket which has been hoovered up, sucked up. And as this falls down, these crystals begin to fall down, they encounter the liquid of the supercooled liquid, and the hailstones form, and they form around the little frog or cricket or piece of dirt or tiny bacteria, and they form a skin, and they encounter more water, and they form another layer of water. And so if you get a hailstone, the hailstones are round, but if you actually cut them open and look at them under polarized light or special light, you can see that there are many, many beautiful layers of that water. So someone's got a ball and slowly painted and lacquered it up. And sometimes in the very center of these hailstones, you can actually see fish. So please go on the internet and ask for what's inside a hailstone or frogs inside hailstone. So you'll see these poor hapless frogs go on this journey that you've gone on intellectually. And the important thing is that as this hailstone rushes through the atmosphere, its electrons get ripped off it and it becomes charged. And so you get a massive electricity build-up. And when this electricity is too much, the lightning forms and a spark forms and there's a breakdown and many millions of amps come down and crash to the ground. You actually have two types of lightning strikes. That's actually strikes from the ground up and actually from the cloud down. There's two lightning strikes. And if you go on a lightning strike weather map, we have such a sophisticated technology that we can see how the lightning ripples through our power generation system, and we can actually locate the position of every lightning strike. So if you look at a weather map and ask for position of lightning strikes, you can actually see them as X's and dots, depending whether they're up or down. So it's a very interesting thing, and of course people are watching these lightning strikes, and if there's a fire which is not associated with lightning, it's most likely to be caused by a bad guy. But let's stop here. We've got the method of doing it. We can actually take that into the classroom with the Van de Graaff generator. And here we have, instead of water going up, we have basically a rubber band. And in the old days, they actually had rubber bands or belts powering from steam engines, powering air compressors. And they noted that this produced very large sparks. And what is actually happening is the actual rubber is creeping around the rollers inside your Van de Graaff generator. So the rubber is stretching and building up its tension, and the tension is building up at the start and being released at the side, and it's actually scraping. And at the top of your Van de Graaff generator, you are also ripping off electrons. And so the electrons are pulled down from your Van de Graaff generator. And sometimes if you've got a good Van de Graaff generator, the effort of pulling more and more electrons away from that top dome, you can actually hear it slow down. And there are many examples where you can actually hear the buildup of charge and its labors here. Now, I suppose the important thing is that electrons, if they build up inside a metal, repel from each other. If you've got excess electrons and they're in a sphere, a steel ball, they will repel from each other inside that. They're free to flow inside that steel ball. And so they will repel equally, as equally distant away from each other. Sort of people who really dislike antisocial people who don't like each other, they'll try and spread themselves around a room or a building so they have the least to do with each other. So that is true with charges in a metal or conductive surface. They will try and move away from each other. But what they will like to tend to do is they like to go to corners, because the corner is actually a place where they've got the least amount of metal on either side of them, and so they can get away from that way. And this is why when you put your hand on one of these Van de Graaff generators and you make sure that you're insulated by standing on something which is non-conducting, so you can become charged, the electrons inside you get pulled out of you and pulled into this Van de Graaff generator, and your hair, which is able to isolate the charge most, becomes positively charged and stands on end. So just in summary here, we've got this natural phenomena which really affects us, and I suppose many people know of lightning strikes or have seen lightning strike various objects and buildings. And you have lightning conductors on buildings, and I suppose the issue of lightning hitting trees or going through planes and things like that. Also, in terms of planes, you have planes which should try and fly away from these thunderstorms, not so much due to thunder, but due to this super cold water which will build up upon the wings if they're not careful. And I think this was very much a problem for the first Americans flying across the Atlantic Ocean, you know it up there, the Atlantic Ocean, with ice building up in the wings. And how it built up so much is, there was just not ice around there. It was super cold water going on these wings, and there was heroic attempts to actually chisel off this ice. But let's get back to another cold situation. So you basically have charge and, in this case, the force of gravity pulling these stones downwards and building up the charge. And so basically, a lightning is basically the force of gravity being on the hailstones being converted into electrical energy. Now, one of the things is that if you've got an ability to get charge and move a charged object, you have the ability to generate your own lightning. And lightning is very high voltage, and it has certain advantages that very high voltages can actually be transmitted very long ways and can be handled very efficiently. So my proposal, and I've won for mad ideas, and the madder it is, the more I like it, because the more you think, people argue about it and they learn from it. So my idea is the Mawson base. So Mawson was an Australian explorer, and he decided to build a base in what is known as the windiest part of Antarctica. I think it's the windiest place on Earth. It's really many, many months, most months of the year, it's blowing a very strong gale. And, of course, without the aid of weather maps and forward planning, that's where they blocked the first Australian exploration base on Antarctica. And so one just automatically knows. You ask many people, and they have many stories about the Australian heroic explorers from the Edwardian era. We just automatically know that's a very windy place. So there is an invention, and you check it up in the US patents, of where you have basically a wire fence with tiny little water sprinklers on them, and the water sprinklers put a tiny little charge on the water droplets. Now, what would normally happen is that these water droplets would be blown away, but the charge would build up and they would just drift back. But if you've got a gale blowing all the time, this water turns to ice and gets blown away. And you can actually harness the wind energy, this wind energy, with basically a horizontal thunderstorm, if you'd like. And you can actually control it very well by actually having electrodes or collection points for the charge, and actually build up a free charge or electricity generation. And now energy is conserved, so the actual charge in the wind will actually slow down the wind. It will actually break the wind, and as charge builds up, you'll actually feel the force of that wind on these structures. But what would you do with energy in Antarctica, especially, and by rights, we've got a principle of minimum interference with Antarctica, so it's very unlikely this will get built. But what you could do is actually build a data center, because one of the issues with the internet, it requires a lot of storage, and this storage requires a lot of computers, and these computers have a lot of heating. So already in North America, they're putting the data storage units in the northern climes of Canada, as far north as possible, so they get natural free cooling, or heating is not such a thing to try and achieve. Now, in Antarctica, this would be an extreme example of it. You've got the free electricity source, the cooling, and the strange idea is that we may actually want to archive a lot of internet information in a node which services, say, Australia and Africa, and South America going up. If you look at what how Antarctica is actually sort of a weird sort of no, and we could actually power these centres through high voltage. So that's just an idea. I admit that it's probably mad, but it's worth thinking, and it's worthwhile actually thinking how it's done, because when you think how it's done, you'll actually understand the science of thunderstorms and the science of Van de Graaff generators. That's all for tonight, but thank you very much for listening. In the meantime, keep on doing science.